What is going on, people? Welcome to Five Rounds today. John Ramdean alongside Robin Black. And man, what a crazy busy weekend in mixed martial arts. And we're very fortunate up here in Canada. We had RFA was tape delay, but we aired RFA 30 or whatever that went down.
All our territories have this.
It's
not just Canada.
No, but I don't think the U.S. has it because I think it's on Access TV. Okay. But if you have Roku, well, there's certain things.
Those guys are good.
But, RFA went down this weekend. We had World Series of Fighting live. Justin Gaethje and Luis Palomino, the rematch. Also, Titan FC went down this weekend. Yeah. We didn't have that. No. That was on Fight Pass.
We didn't have that.
We didn't have that
Fight
one.
Pass. For us, calls that. Does a nice job.
Yeah, great job. Pat Healy and Rick Hahn in the main event. Rick Hahn becomes the new champion. New champion?
Well,
he becomes
the new champion.
Yeah, it was vacant title, right?
Well, for about a day. For a day it was, because Pat was the champ, and then he came in overweight. And
took it, right. So, and then, of course, Bellator / Glory Dynamite went down on Saturday as well. So just a nuts weekend of mixed martial arts. And it's great because we're always, you know, we're hammered with the Ultimate Fighting Championship. We're, especially here in Canada, we're partners with the UFC, and they have their show coming up this Saturday from the Saitama, the famed Saitama Super Arena in Japan, Fight Night Barnett versus Roy Nelson. We're going to talk about that card. But what was your impression? Did you go watch the show, the Bellator show with Dave?
Yeah, my buddy West Coast Dave, John and Jen. Fighting is a cool thing. And I think any sporting event, like people who love football and NASCAR, they have the same experience. When you have a group of friends that loves to get together and watch fights, it becomes the thing that draws you guys together. And so I went over to my buddy West Coast Dave's and we watched it. And you know, as much as Dave's very educated in fighting, and so are my other friends, Jen and John, it's usually the UFC's ability to excite people that gets us to come together. But Bellator did it enough to have Dave be sending out messages, hey, you guys coming over for the Bellator show. So that's kind of a good sign. And we loved it. I mean, Phil Davis was fantastic, and we like Phil.
And I'll be the first one. You say we like Phil. And I like Phil because I respect anybody that decides to step inside of a cage. They sign a contract, they get in a cage, and they try to do battle with somebody else. That's nuts to me. So they have my respect. But I was raised in this stuff. Like I watched MMA before it was MMA. So you get used to seeing guys that, you know, throw caution to the wind. You think back of Takayama and Don Fry.
Or you think back the night before on World Series of Fighting.
Exactly. Justin Gaethje and Luis Palomino. So there's certain things. Although, as a martial artist, an aspiring martial artist, I'm like, that's risky behavior. You don't need to do these things to ensure victory. But when I saw Phil Davis, you know, throughout his career in the Ultimate Fighting Championship, I'm like, this guy has a legitimate martial arts background. Obviously, he's a wrestler. He's a crazy athlete, and he trains at the Alliance team in San Diego, one of the top teams.
Chatted with him in Detroit. He's super smart,
Super smart. Yeah. But his idea is, I don't care about entertaining people. I'm here to try to figure out how to defeat you. And most of the time, if you're a national wrestling champion, you're not going to be able to stop my takedowns. And the problem is, well, what happens when you have somebody that does stop your takedowns? Rashad Evans or Anthony Rumble Johnson? Where's your other path to victory?
Right.
So that's – and he never had one.
Right.
So that's where I looked at Phil. It's like, okay, it's like, sure. And I've used the analogy, you can be the hammer.
Yeah.
But can you be the nail when it's time to be the nail? Yeah. And I think what we saw at the tournament, you know, we didn't get to see a whole lot of it. Yeah. But we got to see some cool stuff from Phil Davis. And again, the creativity with the Kimura on Emmanuel Newton. And for people who have never seen Emmanuel Newton, this guy is 100% legit, super creative too. Very, very difficult to finish.
And different.
Exactly.
Guys like that are hard to fight.
That's right. So you look at that, the fact that Phil goes after it, and right away his grappling was just beautiful. Like, it's almost, he's completely tailored his grappling for mixed martial arts. And it's beautiful to watch. And then you see, it's like, okay, well, I want to see King Mo in the main event now, rib injury, he's out. Francis Comeau in.
Phil
knocks this guy out. So you have to give respect, and you have to, again, I really admired the performances that he had. And now you kind of set something up. You've got storylines. You know, you look at the martial arts background and the story that happened from a fight standpoint. It's like, and I know it's like, okay, we don't really want to know what's next. But after seeing Liam McGeary defeat Tito Ortiz, and Tito looked awesome, it's like, okay, Phil's going to be facing Liam McGeary. What's down the line? How can you try to create interest? Well, King Mo is supposed to fight him. So just trying to figure out the landscape of 205.
That's what Scott Coker was talking about. And, you know, he's not a bragger at all, which is, you know, makes him an individual in a sport like fighting and a job like promoting. You know, he's very unique in that thing. And he's like, he just basically said, without saying, hey, look, we got a lot of good guys now. That's where it's at. He starts talking about mixing and matching these pieces. Why is that important to him and to people who are watching Bellator? Because that means there's fights to get that phone call or that email from your friend saying, hey, you guys coming over for Bellator. They have that ability now. And Phil performed amazingly. But, you know, sometimes guys have these high expectations. We know what they should do and don't do it. Phil did exactly what you'd want if you were Phil Davis. Go in, wreck two guys in the first round, remind everyone, hey, doesn't matter what another promoter said, even if it's the biggest, most famous promoter in the biggest show in the world, I'm a top five guy who can beat anybody. Yeah. And he went out and he strutted that right out there. And we liked Phil personally, and I was a fan. But this is a part of the conversation that we had last week, and it's an ongoing conversation in fighting that I'm sure we're always going to have. It's going to pop up in a variety of ways, different heads of the Hydra, is that idea of fighting like Gaethje did versus the idea of fighting to win fights and preserve your brain cells. Yep. And that aspect is always going to be at play when we all celebrate Justin Gaethje, and we should because he's so courageous and he's so fearsome. Yeah. But when you celebrate it that much, people are like, well, that's how I have to earn money. And Gaethje's getting paid more than everybody else on that card, as well he deserves, but it shapes how people fight. And I know fans who love that kind of stuff are like, good. Mm-hmm. It should shape that. But in the long term of the sport and these guys' brains and the job on them, and if we're going to just every week, it's got to be crazier and crazier, pretty soon we should put a bear in there. And they should have weapons because that's where it has to go. Well, eventually, if we don't look at it and try to show the audience some other perspectives and why they're good.
Which is true. And I understand what you're saying. But you think if you flash forward to the matchup between Chris Weidman and Luke Rockhold, I think when you objectively look at these guys, it's like, where are they lacking in abilities? Well, they're pretty much not lacking anywhere. They're mentally strong. They're physically strong. They're in the prime of their lives. And they are going to bring so many tools to the game. And both those guys are going to have the shit smashed out of them. Mm-hmm. They're going to block things. And they're still going to take damage to the head. And they're still going to take damage to the body. And they're going to walk out of the cage probably sustaining the same type of injuries that Justin Gaethje sustained coming out. And they're fighting at the highest level. He's like, well, this is where I am. I need to rattle the cage, so to speak. I got three kids I need to pay for, and that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and by no means, I hope nobody thinks that I'm not admiring Justin Gaethje, because I do. And that is fun. Yeah. It's really fun. But in the long-term health of these guys, it's scary. Gaethje can fight in other ways, but he's fearsome, he's ferocious, and he's fearless. That's the three Fs. I just think he's having. They didn't even come up with that. And he's got those three Fs. And motherfucker. Yeah. So that's a MF. And he's just like that. And so you should celebrate him. But he gets himself, he talks about it after, that he doesn't remember the fights.
You're like, oh, that's shit. Cool.
Yeah.
He got hit in the head. And he did get hit in the head. But I believe it's because there are a lot of different mental switches that you guys can train themselves to do. And the one he's trained himself to do is literally go into a berserker performance. And
cruise control, so to speak, at a high level.
As strange as it is, it is sort of a form of cruise control. And it is beautiful to watch. But it's scary in the long run. It is frightening. And you have to think of that. I know it's easy to just go, man, look how crazy that crash in NASCAR was, but there's people in that car.
Yeah.
And there's people in the stands. So, I mean, I guess it's just one of those things you weigh. There are so many amazing things in the world. Fighting is an amazing thing, but it has a cost.
I'll tell you, because one of the things, I get a chance to hang out with casual fans and hardcore fans, and you learn people's their motivation for tuning into the sport.
And I know this, that they're all different and that they're different than mine. I've learned that.
And it's sometimes it's difficult to appreciate their side of things. It's like, well, you know, Justin Gaethje, he's doing this, he's risking his health. And they're like, yeah, fuck him. He signed on the dotted line to get into a cage cage and face another man. What else do you want from this? This is what we want as casual fans. I don't give a shit if the guy gets brain damage. I didn't send him to down this path. He decided this is what he's going to do. He set a precedent. So I'm going to tune in. As long as he keeps fighting like this, I'm going to tune in to watch him.
And they're right. Yeah. They really are. It is his choice to fight that way. And he's a pretty smart guy. He knows what he's doing. He knows that's how he's getting paid. And he knows there are inherent risks. It's a comment we brought up before our chat with Vanderlei. He's like, I know that there's a price for this. If you do know it and you're assessing your life and you're saying, I'm going to have an exciting life of fun adventures, I'm going to get paid really well, and I'm going to get some glory that I enjoy, and I'm going to be free as hell out there, and I'm going to feed my kids, but I know there's a cost and I'm willing to pay it. Hey man, more power to you. Yeah. Like I'm the opposite of somebody to police somebody for their safety. You know, if we're going to start doing that, Twinkies got to be illegal. There's more people dying from diabetes than there is from people getting head trauma. So we can't police that. You have every right to do what you choose to do. And hey man, in the end, Justin Gaethje entertained a lot of people and so did Palomino, and they know exactly what they're doing. And it ain't my place to say otherwise. In fact, I commend him for doing what he loves.
Well, it's you know, that whole World Series of Fighting card, and we were talking about it. We know that the UFC is the number one organization on the planet. Number two, I guess, reserved for Bellator, the Bellator Dynamite.
There's arguments, though, if you look at math and you look at metrics, KSW, 1FC reaches 1FC. A lot of people. Yeah. Just because it's in an area of the world that we don't speak the same languages as doesn't mean it ain't huge. So that's hard to say. Bellator's big, though.
So that's what I mean. It's hard. We all know the UFC because they're everywhere. And just trying to figure out what the number two organization is. It feels like Bellator is starting to become the number two organization. Yeah. If they're not already, eventually they're pointed in the direction that they will become the number two organization. Not sure where World Series of Fighting. Where are they? Are they the number five? Are they number four, eight? Are they number two? Yeah. You know what I mean? It's hard to tell.
They're not in the top four because I think that is KSW, 1FC, Bellator, and the UFC.
So you look at that. And the show that they put on, they're really trying to deliver for their hardcore fans, because it's, you know, like, who's Phoenix Jones? The only people that know who Phoenix Jones is are the people that troll the underground.
That's right.
That's what it comes down to. Right. And it's Karis Fodor's brother who trains at AMC Pancration, is the crime fighter in Seattle.
That's a perfect
fit
for him.
Perfect, exactly.
It gives them some of the extra audience, and it gives him the sizable platform that a guy like that exactly fits into. So it's a nice fit.
We got to take a quick break. We're going to talk about all the other fights that were happening. Bellator Dynamite happened this weekend, and we're looking ahead to Barnett versus Roy Nelson. The undercard, if you're here in Canada, happening right here on Fight Network. Don't go anywhere. More Five Rounds today when we come back. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. We are taking a look at all the fights that went down this weekend. Titan FC happened, a World Series of Fighting live right here on the channel. In Canada, Justin Gaethje retaining or defending his lightweight championship against Luis Palomino, who is a stud. I will watch that dude fight every single day. Also on the card, we had Dave Branch kind of make mixed martial arts history. He became the two-division champion. He's already the current 185-pound champion, went up to 205 pounds to face Teddy Holder, who stopped Thiago Silva. So it makes sense. Yeah. You got storylines that you're going with. He gets the rear naked choke victory. I'm not surprised, considering it's a black belt under Renzo Gracie. I went and talked to him when we were in New York. So he left Arizona and then made the trek to San Jose, California to be in the corner of Liam McGeary, who fought in the main event.
Awesome. Good weekend.
Great weekend of mixed martial arts. And, of course, Liam McGeary looking to defend his 205-pound championship in the main event of Bellator Dynamite against Tito Ortiz. And people are like, oh, Tito's washed up. He stinks. He can't compete. Tito looked pretty good.
The reason I'm checking my phone is because Ryan Hall, I was trying to get him on today. Yeah. And we're going to have him on next Monday.
Yes.
Or next Tuesday, whatever it is. Next week.
And Ryan Hall is a good dude, man. Really good, if you've had a chance to watch Tough 22, nobody's legs are safe.
No.
He just dives in no matter what. And people, everybody I would imagine knows the strategy. Because when you're scouting the house. Who's going to be in the house? What's the biggest threat? Well,
before
this guy,
you continue, yeah, yeah, we are literally like insects with our brains.
Yeah.
I didn't even address Tito, and suddenly I've introduced Ryan Hall, and we're going to talk about that now. That's where we are. Our brains are like this big.
We're not
distracted by shiny.
We are shiny things.
Ryan Hall, though, that's what we should talk about.
Yeah, so,
personally, I think he's a more relevant story over the next 10 years than Tito, and I'm a Tito fan.
Yeah.
But I really do.
Yeah. And, you know, what's cool about the whole situation is that, you know, it seems that there's a path to stop this guy. Punch him in the face as soon as he dives for the knees. But people are so afraid and so concerned with the heel hooks that they have no choice because he is a supreme master. And I'm sure he's a supreme master when you look at the grand scheme of mixed martial arts and jiu-jitsu.
He's not, this isn't his biggest thing.
Yeah.
He's one of the inventors. Yeah. He won't say he is of the 50-50 guard. But the right angle, other chokes, this isn't even his real bread and butter.
Right.
And they should be afraid of his heel hooks. And it is really interesting, and we've had this conversation a year, year and a half ago when we discussed the well-roundedness was fighting. And we're like, we will see the rise of the specialist again.
Yeah.
We will. It'll be weird specialties. It'll be subspecialties, but we will see it. Is he fighting the top guys in the world yet? Probably not. But when you can deliver that, so if you had 8 months to prepare for Ryan Hall and say really all he has is leg locks, you would approach that a certain way.
Yeah.
You'd approach the training and the preparation for that a certain way. If you've got 3 days to deal with him, don't go training escapes when he – train to not get him there. I know you shouldn't address the fact that, well, what if he does get there? But we only have 3 days, so we must train to not have him be there. We're going to fight from the outside. We're going to move. We're going to move laterally. We're going to make him chase us, and we're going to –
But he's going to set up traps.
Yeah, I know
he's
he is.
Set up
but
traps.
At least that's a strategy. You don't spend 2 or 3 days working on escaping the 50-50 guard when this guy has readjustments and readjustments. He's got 30 of them. It'll take you years to find them all, and by the time you do, he'll have 30 more. You're never going to win that battle.
What's interesting, so I'm going to bring this back to Tito Ortiz and Liam McGarry. Because
I want to see how you do that.
And the reason why I say that is because if you're Liam McGarry and his team, you're like, okay, where can Tito beat us? Well, we know what Tito's good at. He's good at old school ground and pound. Put you on your back and smash you from inside of your guard. Okay, there's a chance that we may be here.
Yeah.
Let's focus on being in this situation. Where can we exploit Tito Ortiz when we're in this situation? And we saw threatening with the arm lock, which you felt Tito was concerned with.
Yeah, he seemed stressed by that because it was so fast. And who wouldn't be? Yeah, I think this is almost, in a weird kind of way, it's the opposite. It's like against – oh, no, actually, it's sort of the same. The issue is the ability to put it where you want. I'm saying if you're fighting Ryan, you have to stop it there.
Yeah.
If you're fighting Tito, you're like, I can't stop it there.
That's right.
I'm going to be in the spot he wants, so I must find an answer there. With Ryan, you're like, I'd rather not be in that spot because I won't find an answer in that spot. I've got to stop him before we get there. With Tito, it's like, even that one, I would have said, and we did say leading in, it's a terrible strategy to say, well, he's going to take me down, so I'll submit him. That's like 2008.
Yeah.
That's 2010. But he made it work. It's a hard strategy because over 25 minutes, it starts getting harder and harder to do as he hurts you more and more and you just get sweaty. But he pulled it off, and that's super legit, and it's super cool.
Yeah, and now the future, it looks like Phil Davis is going to take on Liam McGarry. So I would imagine between now and that date, it's just takedown defense, anti-grappling, which, I mean, it's already a part of Liam McGarry's. He works at the Henzo Gracie gym. So you know when you're working with Dave Branch and all those guys, the goal is to improve every day in your anti-wrestling or your grappling area.
The issue there, again, what you can't do against Ryan Hall, and again, we're pretending that he's a leg lock specialist just because that's been the narrative.
Yeah.
He is not a leg lock specialist.
Yeah.
That's just one of the things you have to deal with him. But if you're dealing with him, it's like, well, we cannot win the leg lock game. We can't win the 50-50 game no matter how long we work on it. And with Phil, you're not going to win the wrestling game. You're not going to win it. So maybe going back and trying to submit Phil is the best thing. I can't beat him at wrestling. He's been doing this his whole life, and I'm 8 years behind. Even if I spent the 8 years, he'd get better for eight. So maybe we do have to submit Phil Davis. It's a weird one. It's an old school approach. Yeah. It's like, well, I
but sometimes
but it's
you,
fun.
You know, when you and I get the chance to call old school pancrase shows, and there's times we're watch fights from 8 years ago, and you're seeing modern techniques yeah. utilized.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, some of these, but these old school techniques, they introduce them, and then they go away, and then they come back.
Yeah, right. True.
So, you know, there's
yes,
times where
that's what we said we thought we would eventually yeah. see is the submission game, particularly from guard, would have to return for a lot of reasons. If nobody, if everyone's gone, when you're in a guard, when you're on your back, you initiate get-ups, you initiate hip heists, and you get back to your feet, you don't submit guys. Okay, let's accept that's the truth. For the next year and a half, whenever I'm on top of you in the gym, you're doing only that. Pretty soon, my ability to defend submissions degenerates because I'm not training it.
Yeah.
Nobody's trying to submit
right.
me off their back. So that slow degradation of the whole game of being aware to defend submissions has declined, where a couple of key guys, Lee McGeary being one of them, are like, I'll be working on this. Well, all these guys are getting a little worse at stopping subs off the back because they don't believe in it anymore. I'll get a little better.
Josh Thompson also on the card taking on Mike Bronzulis. Josh Thompson, where I think we all expected him to be. You know, we saw the fights with Ben Henderson. I personally had him winning Ben Henderson, that fight against Ben Henderson. Bobby Green fight, very, very close as well. So I think that Josh Thompson can compete at the highest level. He has his personal relationship with Coker.
Yep.
He fought for Strikeforce. So he's decided Coker, you know, me and Coker are buddies or whatever the relationship
whatever it is.
They're offering me, you know, money comparable to the UFC. And I don't have to fight Eddie Alvarez and Ben Henderson again. I can fight some of these guys, especially when I'm 36 years of age. Is there a place for guys like that?
Just like I thought that superhero was the best fit for World Series of Fighting, I think Josh Thompson's the best fit for Bellator. Like you said, the relationships are key. And you need a good performances out of this guy in San Jose, in Southern California, all those places. He didn't materialize to be as big of a draw in the UFC as he might have been in his 20s.
Right.
He's also... So a lot of these guys who have a lot of personality, they kind of just file all the sharp points off their personality. And then in interviews, you know, I just want to thank the UFC for the opportunity. I'll face who's ever in front of me. All that junior hockey player nonsense. And suddenly you're like, oh, cool. I can't remember his name, but he's really good. You know what I mean? I think in the UFC, the desire to fit in, you got an exciting guy with exciting talent who's aggressive, who's been in some of the best fights outside of the UFC ever. And then he gets in there and kind of takes all those sharp edges off, and you kind of don't notice him as much. Back in Bellator, he can be a star. He was supposed to win that fight. He was supposed to dominate that fight, and he did exactly.
We're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, Fedor Emelianenko returns to mixed martial arts. Who's he going to be fighting? We'll tell you who we think when we come back to Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you. We had a loaded weekend of mixed martial arts, World Series of Fighting, RFA, M1 we had here on the channel, Titan Fighting, and of course Bellator Dynamite paired with Glory Kickboxing went down. We got to see some really great fights. Liam McGeary defending his light heavyweight championship against Tito Ortiz. Phil Davis winning the tournament. Josh Thompson getting a victory. Carrie Ann Melendez getting a victory. Paul Daly getting a victory. But I think most people would say the big news, the signing of one Fedor Emelianenko. There's been speculation over the last couple of months, I guess. Oh, he's going to the UFC eventually. This is what's going to happen. We're going to see one of the greatest fighters in the history of fighting finally get to the world's big stage. No, it didn't happen. Yeah. It didn't happen because I think Fedor has a certain perspective and certain perspective on his employers. And he's been vocal about it in the past, saying that I want to work with good people, and I want to work with people that aren't there to insult fighters. And then and I'm not surprised. Working with Saki Kibara, a new Japanese organization happening before the end of the year. Their Dynamite show, so to speak, or Shockwave show, goes down December 31st, which is a throwback to the way things used to be done in Japan. And are you surprised by this move?
I'm not surprised. I'm really not. But there's certain elements we look at, and sometimes it really benefits you if you're in any kind of situation, or you're in a fight with your girlfriend, or you're in any kind of conflict or whatever, to try to put yourself in the other people's shoes. And, you know, the UFC does get a bad rap, and we all jump on it. We all look and go, man, they got to pay these guys more. Man, they screwed that guy. Look, and ultimately, as businesses grow, it becomes impossible. People run out of time. They run out of the energy to do the right things, and they deal with the giant, uncontrollable growth of a company. And some of these things aren't like, Dana White's a terrible person, or this guy's bad. It's, this is what happens in a capitalist society when things grow. So I'm agreeing that Fedor probably looks at the UFC like many of us do and says, these guys aren't good to fighters. And there's a lot of truth to that. I just think that the goal is to remove any personal feelings. It's very hard to do in any one of these situations, but to remove any personal feelings and look at it from their perspective. In most of these cases, you know that they're like, we wish we could do better, but they can't. They're just arguing with it. Anyways, I don't know why specifically I'm defending the UFC, but you try to look at these things with as much informed perspective as possible. But ultimately, yes, that's Fedor's opinion. It's the opinion of a lot of people. And as a result, also, what's the right thing for Fedor right now? To go and have the toughest fights in the world for a little less money, that we finally get to see him fight the toughest people, or rematch with Verdum, who's better than he was back then, or any of these things, or to get paid way more and headline and be celebrated on New Year's Eve in Japan by people who love him for a lot of money. That makes the most sense for Fedor.
And I think that's what, when you look objectively at all, like when he is looking at making this decision, it's like, yes, that's one element. Yeah, I don't like the way that they've treated their fighters in the past. That the president has had these disparaging comments about this and that. On top of that, I've worked with Scott Coker in the past. This is going to be a co-promoted event. You know, Coker promoted Strikeforce. I fought for Strikeforce. Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah.
Again, you mentioned Coker with a couple other guys earlier. Yeah. His relationships are key to this.
And that's what it comes down to. It's like, sure, I could go down this route and I might be able to make a whole lot of money. But this makes more sense for me personally, and I'm going to make a bunch of money as well. So
exactly.
I think that the problem is the fans are like, oh, this is bullshit, like Ariel. He's like...
our Ariel in the office.
He's like... Ariel Schneer, guy instrumental in helping the growth of Fight Network.
Yeah.
He's like, it's going to be Bobby Lashley or something. It's like, oh, well, that's not necessarily the worst thing I've heard of. Good for Fedor. It's in Japan, a pro wrestler, so to speak. So that makes sense. And I look at, maybe Tito Ortiz. Tito Ortiz just lost. I mean, we're talking about September. That's happening at December 31st.
225 pounds.
Exactly, because Fedor looked pretty lean when he spelled. Exactly. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of options. You brought up Kimbo Slice.
Let Fedor go knock out Kimbo Slice.
That's right. In Japan, people would go bonkers for
anywhere. People go nuts.
They love Fedor in Japan. You put Kimbo Slice.
And Kimbo's like, give me $1 million.
Yeah, give me $1 million.
Whatever it's going to cost, it's going to be worth it.
That's right. And we're going to put it on Spike TV, so they'll get crazy, crazy ratings. These are all speculations, they're real speculations.
It's the kind of shit that goes on
in our brains. But you think about that. You can understand the wheels are in motion. Yeah. Okay, what is going to bring the most attention? Mm-hmm. What's going to get the biggest fans, the largest audience in Japan? What's going to be compelling for the North American audience? You know, because in the past, like Hongman Choi, I don't know how interesting that is for North American fans. People want to see Fedor beat up a big South Korean guy who has less than par skill set of mixed martial arts. I don't know. I think
people
want to see
him. He
looks good, and that's what it comes down to.
And he's famous.
And that's it. You know, he's famous. He has the now starting to get more experience. Like, I know he's supposed to be fighting James Thompson. Yeah. If he can beat, James Thompson, Fedor, James Thompson.
My thoughts... I don't know. You're trying to learn things. You're trying to get to be a person with a bigger
perspective. I gotta stop you there. You want to know what he says. We got to take a quick break, and then he'll give us his thoughts, and then we're going to look ahead to Josh Barnett and Roy Nelson on Five Rounds today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Before the break, we're talking about Fedor Emelianenko making his return to mixed martial arts, and you had something you wanted to say.
Oh, yeah. I was just saying my thoughts on it have changed, on him and a lot of these fights.
Because you were a Fedor hater.
A little bit. I think I just didn't buy it. But now, with more information, understanding fighting better, I see that there were some very special things he did. But I think, in general, you're trying to learn things to be not only better at whatever your job is, but kind of become a more complete person. Yeah. More complete people try to think other ideas other than their
own. I changed brake lights this weekend. Yeah,
there you go.
That's not my thing.
That's not your thing. But
that's horseshit.
Don't you feel good being able to learn something new? And different perspectives are valuable. And not that long ago, much like Ariel, our friend here at Fight Network, would be like, this is crazy. Why isn't he fighting these guys? I would have felt that way. I want to see the highest level fights.
Chris Weidman, Luke Rockhold,
yeah,
so to speak.
I want to see Fedor doesn't care what I think.
Yeah, I know.
Fedor does not care what me or anybody else thinks. He might have at 25. He might have when he was accomplishing something for his family or his country or whatever. But in his later 30s, he's trying to take care of himself. Fedor doesn't care what we think. So once you understand that, why be frustrated about it? Think about it from his perspective. He's going to take the fight that he wants. But you're right. We're going to talk about Josh Barnett, too. Josh Barnett, just going and examining him and looking back and building a breakdown on him has been the most fulfilling looking back at fights I've ever had. It's been so beautiful to watch this guy's fights. And when I look back at Fedor, I learned a lot, and it was the same kind of thing. There are some of these guys that people just, and I didn't really understand how great Fedor was, but we just don't see how special they are.
What I found very strange, and you talk about Josh Barnett, he's going to be taking on Roy Nelson at the famed Saitama Super Arena, which, you know, Pride had so many shows there. And Fedor are part of so many of those shows. And Barnett and Fedor were supposed to fight at that Affliction show, and that all went to shit, and Affliction fell apart. But you look at Josh Barnett, and he's one of these guys, I think, based on just pure looks, his body type.
Yeah.
People think that he's not as good as he is. Because you compare him and Phil Davis or Bobby Lashley. Oh, these guys are killers. This guy's just a soft little dough guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, it's true.
But he'll destroy people. Yeah. Josh Barnett has such a mean streak. Hey, you know, we were looking back at the Pedro Hizo second fight after Barnett got knocked out in their first fight. And it's Pedro Hizo, man. Randy Couture told me that he's got a divot in his leg to this day from where Hizo just kept kicking him
and destroyed the tissue
in his leg.
Yeah.
So when he feels that, it's like, oh, yeah, that crazy fight
in
with Pedro
Hizo. In that fight, man, all the formative Josh Barnett fights are amazing. When you see his mind, and more than his brute force and stuff, but there's a moment in the fight where Hizo hasn't been kicking. In the rematch for Affliction, where Hizo hasn't been kicking because probably worried about the takedown, figures I can just beat this guy with my hands. Barnett wants the takedown, kicks him hard. You see Hizo think, oh, and do that natural instinct to kick back.
Yeah.
As soon as he motions to kick back, Barnett is in on him.
Yeah.
Shit like that. Just literally brilliance within the moment. And he sets him up overhand right. He flees back out of range to a safe range, did it a couple times, and then when he's trained him what the safe range is, all he does is step forward with a hook, like the simplest thing in the world.
And lays him the fuck out.
And there are moments in, there's seven fights in the breakdown I'm doing for Saturday night, and there are seven moments of brilliance in them. There's more than seven, but there are seven. There's one little thing in each one you can go, look at how crazy this is for a heavyweight. And it's all different things. Grappling in one, submission in another, striking in a different one, mean streak in one, mindset in one. Guys like this are so rare. There were times where people did celebrate some of these guys as the best fighters in the world. And when they get a little later in their life, you hope they get another chance at it.
Yeah, but I look at Josh Barnett, though. You look at his philosophy, because one of the things, you know, as a, you know, we train in martial arts.
Yeah.
So you're always trying to learn new things from things. And what I've learned is that it's a personal journey, that what works for you isn't going to work for me, because we have different body types, we have different pain thresholds, all these different things. And I know, like, for example, you do jiu-jitsu, you have to follow the jiu-jitsu law. This is positioning and this and this and this. Whereas Barnett, it's like, all of the names and techniques are thrown out the window, and it's just The goal is to acquire as much knowledge as humanly possible so that even when you're in bad positions, you can go in, you can go on the offensive.
Yeah, and you write names and stuff. You'll tell them, oh, that Kimura you did was great. It's like, that's a hammerlock or that was chicken wing or whatever. Yeah, and it's a piece. I've spoken to him. We've spoken to him before. I had him on a podcast. I have a very good friend, Alex Ponovic, and we're friends in common. So Al has told me a lot about him. And he's just his own guy. So through his course of his life, loving heavy metal and comic books and pro wrestling when he feels like it and doing whatever he wants.
Fast cars.
He has, through that journey, become a more and more deadly human being and been paid to show that off either in a performance like wrestling or in a real fight. And he is a unique guy who does things his own way, and there's never been anyone like him. And you hope. And Roy Nelson, Roy Nelson's phenomenal.
He's phenomenal.
Amazing. He's fun to watch. He's very interesting. He's cool. He's unique. But we have been very distracted by the return of Josh Barnett because for whatever reason, it's a moment in time where like, oh yeah, how on earth did people forget about this guy?
And one of the reasons why I look at Josh Barnett and I admire him is because he is constantly evolving. Like, why would you don't need to knock out Pedro Hizo. That's his way of winning the fight.
Right.
You can take him down, but he is not that guy. The goal is to keep getting better. And, you talk to martial artists and you talk to coaches and trainers, and the goal is perfection. There's no such thing as perfection. But the idea of constantly pursuing perfection, I think Josh Barnett is one of those guys. And we haven't seen him in the last couple of years, and I expect to see a very different but the same Josh Barnett.
And that, like, people are also affected by emotion, situations, everything. That guy's best performance of his life were in Japan, too. So that's going to be an interesting one. I can't wait for that. I really, really am excited about that fight this weekend. And more so than a lot, we do get a whole lot of fighter A versus fighter B, where the feeling sometimes, for me, everyone's different. Some people are like, oh my God, it was the craziest fight. For me, I'm interested to see how that global understanding of where the martial arts is elevates. And 10 fights in a night, you'll see influences of that will carry over the next month. But with Josh Barnett, it's just like, oh yeah, right. One of these crazy superheroes is fighting. If he loses, Roy Nelson found the answer.
Yeah.
And Roy Nelson, sometimes his simplicity is the key because, again, one of these philosophies for thousands of times, we'll hear thousands more. You could train 1,000 things once, or I can train one thing 1,000 times. And Roy Nelson hasn't appeared to train a whole lot other than this is better every night. This is better every night. Those two things in conjunction. If
refining.
And you know, we talked earlier about action and earning your money that way. That guy grew that beard out, grew that long hair out, and said, this is how I'm making my cake. And he likes cake.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I think one of the reasons why people tune into Roy Nelson, because he's kind of the everyman. People don't realize the amount of time he actually spends training. I think people say, oh, he's just a fighter. Yeah. He just goes in. Yeah. You look at it. Clearly, he's not running. Yeah. Clearly, he's not doing these certain things. He's focused on this beard, and he's got big punching power, and that's it. That's not the truth.
No, Roy Nelson
trains his ass off. He just happens to consume a lot of calories.
Exactly.
That's just the way it works.
Exactly. He likes cake. But the idea of being able to land with that kind of power and precision, that takes millions of repetitions.
But will he do it? Will he be able to do it against Barnett? What type of game do you expect from Barnett? I anticipate that Josh Barnett is going to stand. I think he's going to try to get a hold of Roy Nelson's torso and batter him in the clinch.
Yeah.
Just smash him apart, put him up against the cage, and try to break his body, not give Nelson any room to throw the he might need a couple of uppercuts, but I don't think it's going to matter.
Yeah, what you just don't want to be is at the range, and the range is deceptive. You know what? That belly serves a lot more than just being a place to like put burgers in and have it go there.
Beer,
because,
too.
Yeah, and beer. It's deceptive. Range is a deceptive thing. If everybody you train with has this size body, you can figure out the reach that you've seen thousands of times. If his moves out to here, the whole range has changed.
Right.
Your visible range in between there. And that may be a subtle thing, but it's one of the keys. That weird body shape. You mentioned Randy. Randy told me the big thing with Brock Lesnar was that you couldn't understand the range because it's like when you see a sign in Las Vegas, you're like, oh, that hotel's like 4 blocks from here. And it's like 3 miles because the sign is so
right,
big.
Right.
So your depth perception has changed. Your relevance has changed. And it changes the range. And he said that was the thing with Brock.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking about more action from the Saitama Super Arena here on Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds. Today, Saturday, September 26th, the UFC returns to the Saitama Super Arena. Josh Barnett, Roy Nelson in the main event. And man, this is actually a pretty solid card. Kid Yamamoto returns to action. Kyoji Horiguchi, who we saw face off with Demetrius Johnson earlier this year in Montreal, taking on the uber-tough Chico Camus. As well, Uriah Hall stepping up and taking on one of my favorite fighters in all of mixed martial arts right now, maybe ever, in Gegard Mousasi. Also, if you're in Canada, you get to watch the undercard, the prelims, live here on the channel, the main event, Katsunori Kikuno, which we've called a bunch of his fights before he went to the UFC, fighting in deep, taking on Diego Brando, Ultimate Fighter guy. Mousasi, thoughts?
Awesome.
As simple as that? Yeah.
Awesome. You're welcome.
He's so awesome because he's evolved. Like, you go back and you look at the King Mo fight. So you go, okay, well, because in fighting in other places, we're here to try to win, attempt to finish the fight. You look at Japan, that was the criteria.
Yeah, right.
That's what was scored the highest. If you're trying to go for submissions, if you're trying to go for the knockout, you are going to win the fight based on that. In North America, we all know it's like, no, just the person who spends the most time in top position, so to speak, whether that's standing on the ground or whatever, gets the fight. He learned that in the King Mo fight. He couldn't do anything because King Mo kept taking him down. Yeah. He couldn't sweep or submit. And it's like, oh, I got to learn to play this game now.
Yeah.
And he did. And he just looks spectacular. And I think that we're going to continue to see the evolution of this guy's game.
He's got so many tools. And like, he has, what, 900,000 fights and he's 13 years old?
He's actually, you know, he looked now because he's been in the game for so long.
Is he 27?
He's actually 30 years old.
No way.
Yeah, he's 30.
Well, but he has been in the game for
37, 5, and 2.
That's insane.
Yeah. 19 knockouts, 12 submissions.
Fights,
insane.
19 knockouts, 12 submissions.
Dan Henderson, Mark Munoz, Ovince St. Preux, fought to a draw with Keith Jardine. Pretty crazy. I get it. I'm just saying that.
Like Keith. Yeah, I don't know why everyone
picks
on Keith.
No, it's not picking on Keith. Yeah. But, you know, Jacare tapped out Mark Hunt, knocked out Babalu, defeated Dennis Kang.
Yeah.
Like, throughout
on
his career.
On and on.
Hector Lombard.
Consistently beating everybody.
Good dude. So, and that's, like, he started in 2003.
Yeah, 12 years ago. That's why we think of him partly young, but even that. Think of that. 2003, and he is only 30 now, and he has 44 fights. That's crazy.
It is crazy.
The amazing thing, too, we've talked about, you know, the damage these guys take and how much they give it to be able to do this. This guy's head movement is so casual. Like, has he been knocked out once? Twice? Like, in five losses, has he ever been knocked out?
No, never been knocked out.
He's never been knocked out. That's how you have a career.
Yeah.
That's how you have a career, and his skills are so great. When there was the cost that we were talking about it on Five Rounds, the shorter show this week, and they showed the Costas Philippou stuff, and we went to talk about it as the B-roll came up, and the wrestling looks awesome, and as he comes up, a couple punches, and he's just so casually, like it's nothing, because that's the level he's operating on of skill. And Uriah Hall's a really fun fight for him, because I think Uriah Hall has to attack, or he's screwed.
Yeah.
He has to. He doesn't have to, in the terms of, you know, nobody's saying you must do this.
Yeah, yeah.
But if he wants to win, he has to.
Because if he doesn't, Mousasi's going to stalk him. He is going to, like, sure, it's not the type of spinning attacks that Uriah Hall, you know, presents, but Mousasi just plods forward, forces you, stresses you out to the point that you go on the offensive, he slips, knocks you unconscious.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the game, and that's why I can see where Uriah Hall is like, I better pull a BJ Penn and be first. Yeah.
How many times has he been submitted? Maybe like three out of those?
Three times.
Yeah.
Three times.
None of them probably in the last 7 or 8 years. So you're either...
Well, Jacare was the...
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So and we're talking about Jacare.
Exactly. So Uriah Hall, can you beat him over 15 minutes? I don't believe so.
Yeah.
I don't know how you would without hurting him very badly. Can you be the first one to knock him out? Maybe. Maybe. You have... He's got a lot of skill.
Yeah.
Uriah Hall has a lot of skill.
Yeah.
I think if he's going to catch him, you know, when you start like as relaxed as Mousasi does... Just kind of gets going. You know, that's why he never gets hit. It's really weird. You start like that, maybe Uriah Hall, who's crazy fast, he's got good acceleration, he's explosive, he's got lots of skills, a lot of high impact stuff. Maybe if he starts really fast, as this guy's starting really slow, he catches him.
Maybe, but he's also faced Mike Kyle, who's super fast, Ovince St. Preux, who's really fast, Sokaju, Melvin Manhoff, guys. He's faced that type of body type and explosive power in the past.
Mike Kyle in there. Good thing you had Mike Kyle in that list.
When we come back, we're going to wrap things up here on Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you. Holy smokes, there's a lot of stuff going on this weekend in mixed martial arts. And as we look ahead to the show in Japan, what do you think so far at this point in the mixed martial arts calendar? We're in late September. We're looking at the last couple of months of the year. What do we take away from where we are
at
this point?
The last coming up or what we
just
seen?
Everything. So yeah. up until this point, we know it's coming forward. The UFC has that basically an event the week in December. Three events.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor taking on Jose Aldo. It's going to be a ridiculous.
Yeah. You got Ronda in Australia coming up. That's and you got Weidman on that. Like,
and Jacare on the card as well.
Some of the craziest fights you've seen are coming up.
Fedor resigns. Yeah. What's your take on the landscape of things?
You know, we're in a star culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's true if you are in any field at all. So the UFC has to work around Ronda and Conor McGregor. Now, fortunately, they're also really fun to watch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if all they were just – which is why – this is out of left field, but why at different times I had been against the idea of CM Punk fighting, because he can only get so good in a year. And so all of a sudden, if he's a star, but he's not all that good, then what are we doing here? But I've started to, again,
warm up to the idea.
My friend Duke just loves him, thinks he's the best guy. I went late in life and tried to fight. I didn't do it in the UFC. They wouldn't have had me, but I'm not famous like him, so I can't begrudge him that. I probably would have done it. Everyone hated me for starting in it, and I learned to deal with it. So I understand what he's doing, and I don't begrudge him it at all. And I think he talks openly about not being the best fighter, and I think that helps a lot. He's honest, he's smart, and he's honest. So anyway,
how important is it to be honest in this sport? You look at Scott Coker, and he's like, yeah, this is the sport of mixed martial arts, but we're here to entertain people that come to the venue, and if that means Kimbo Slice, or if that means Paige Van Zandt, or if that means Conor McGregor, we got to do what we have to do to sell tickets.
Yeah, I think I get that. I do think people do appreciate honesty. I think you can say Paige Van Zandt is an absolute star. There's something about her. She's beautiful, and when she speaks, and look at how ferocious she fights, she's not yet ready for the top. She needs two more years. Look how young she is. Why should she fight the top person right now? I think you can say that honestly, and I think that's an interesting story. Can this person with so much star power really become a champion? Awesome story. I think people get excited about that. I don't think you have to lie ever in the fight game. I really, truly don't believe you have to. Because it deep down in every single fight, in every single matchup, in every single story, there's something fascinating. You just have to find it and genuinely tell it to the audience.
Next week, Ryan Hall hopefully will be here on the phone talking to us about his crazy submission abilities, as well as this goal to become a mixed martial arts fighter and at the highest level, and maybe hopefully be a UFC champion, as well all the fallout from UFC Fight Night that goes down in Japan. For Robin Black, our producer Chase Kaiser, I'm John Ramdean. We'll see you next time on Five Rounds Today.